Everyday injustice. Too many wrongful convictions. Corruption has infected the criminal justice system, leaving too many people helpless, fighting for their lives instead of receiving justice. People suffer. Is that why they say justice is blind?
Today on Everyday Injustice, we have Art Luna, who is incarcerated at Corcoran, California. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm, like I mentioned earlier, I'm a bit anxious here, a little bit nervous, but yeah, I'm ready to go and do this.
All right. So can you tell us a little bit about your story and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. Like you said, my name is Art Luna, 49 years old. Last 29 and over half years I've been here in prison. I committed my crime on 21. I came to prison not even a year after that. So it was hard. It was a shock to come over here in prison. But I was dealing, struggling with a lot of stuff, a lot of issues, had a lot of angers, and what wasn't wrong with me back then.
What happened that got you into the prison in the first place?
Sure. In Ecuador, like I said, everything happens at home. And really, that's what happened with me at home. Everything started at home. You know, I grew up in a... and my dad was an alcoholic. He drank. He was really abusive. And he took out his anger on my mom and us. He was really controlling. And he affected me really, really bad. I still remember back, you know, when things started to happen at home, you know, and how my dad, you know, I just wanted his love. At the end of all this, I just wanted to be loved by my dad. And I just didn't have that. Well, he wasn't good at showing or expressing it to me. You know, I understand today that he wasn't perfect. I understand that he didn't know better. But back then, it's just difficult, and I didn't get it. You know, I thought I did something wrong. So, you know, it was abuse. I mean, physically, but more than anything, it was the emotional part that really destroyed me inside. It was really what. That was really what. You know, made it so hard for me. I developed a lot of issues. You know, I started running away from home. You know, I started to hang out with the wrong crowd. I grew up in a drug-infested area, gangs. All my friends since elementary school were all gangs. What I thought, believe was missing at home, that love from my dad, I found it in the streets. And I gave my whole life to that. All my life was that to that gang. Most of my life was spent on that. Even here in prison, you know, trying to prove myself and everything just because of that acceptance or what I believe I didn't have at home. And so it was really hard. It was really hard. Like I said, I committed myself to my gang. I rode with them. Everything that they asked me and some. I committed this crime. I tried it. They got me here at 25 to a life sentence. Been here ever since. I still look back at everything that was going on at that time. And, I mean, wow. Yeah. It was difficult. You know, I mean, for a young kid as me, I gave up. It's not that I didn't try. I tried to be good. I tried to help my parents. I tried to... What didn't I try to do? But it was just, I wasn't moving forward. It wasn't, I just gave up. I gave up on life. I gave up on everybody. And I just rode and became this gang member, you know, spent most of my time in that. That's 2019. I left that. I walked away from all that because I was just tired. It was getting me nowhere. I realized it was just a waste of my life. Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous here.
Well, let me ask you this.
Can you help me out here?
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, you've spent now 28 years in prison. What kind of led you to the moment where you're like, man, I'm not getting anywhere with all this. I need to change.
You know, I thought about that. You know what I mean? When I came into prison in 96, there was no self-help. There was no education out here. There was nothing to, you know, I mean, I'm not putting up excuses or none of that. At the end of things, I chose to do the things that I did. But there was nothing out here for us. All there was go out to yard and, you know, fight or go to war or stab each other. That's how we did. That's how we did out here for, till like, what, 2013, 2016 or somewhere around there. That's when finally rehabilitation started happening around here. So... But I committed a stabbing in 2005. You know, I was stuck here in this shoe, actually in this yard right here, before it got shut down, this security housing unit. And I got back here, and I seen the type of people that were back here. I didn't want to be like them no more. I promised myself I was not ever going to do anything. Harm anybody like that no more. And it was difficult. It was hard, but I promised myself to never do that again. I just didn't want to be back here no more. And after that, I ended up getting validated as an associate of a prison gang and got sent to Pelican Bay Shu. And I was back there again, alone. My family, I wasn't writing to my family. I wasn't writing to nobody. Alone. I felt really alone. And I would ask myself, well, what is my purpose? Why am I doing it? Why am I still back here? You know, at that time, my mom was dying of cancer. And but still, I couldn't leave it. I don't know why I didn't have the courage to leave. But I finally made it out that shoe security housing 2013. And I went to my first board hearing, which they gave me a 7-year denial, but they even asked me there, Luna, what's going on with you? You know, you're controlling cases, not keeping you in here. What's going on? You want to go home? You know, they let me have it, but they also gave me a little bit of hope. And plus, like I mentioned, my mom had passed away from cancer. I mean, I just started really thinking about everything. And still, I still stayed over there in general population. Still thinking that I could, you know, try to make it out of here. But I started going to self-help. I started really going to groups and trying to work on myself and trying to find out what was going on here with me. But another thing that I forgot to mention here, while I was in the shoe, I started writing my dad. I started writing my dad from back then. Because I didn't want, I don't know, was something was, I just wanted to write him. Let him know that, you know, I want to know what happened with him. And I started thinking that why, because he wasn't evil. My dad was not evil. I know he's not perfect and all that, and he put me through shit, he put me through hell. All of us, my mom, everybody. But he was, you know, I mean, he was just not evil. Man. So I wanted to know what happened to him. I wanted, you know, also found that it was not his fault why I'm here in prison or why it turned out this way. You know what I mean? And in a lot of ways, I was telling him sorry for, you know what I mean, disappointing him. That's one. But, you know, when I got out of the shoe, I asked him. I managed to get in touch with him and talk to him. And I asked him about all that mail that I sent him. He never opened a single letter. He didn't have the courage to open it. He thought I was, I don't know what he thought I was going to tell him, but I told him I was wanting to, I just needed him. I just wanted to talk to him. And that I was sorry. You know what I mean? I know how he, in a way, how he felt. You know, but things started just happening to me in here. I just didn't, this didn't make no sense to me anymore. It never did. But again, where else would I have gone? You know what I mean? There was no protection for us, even if we wanted to leave the gang. It was even worse on this side. There's so many gangs over here. So, but I just didn't feel that no more. I just didn't have that no more in me. I was just tired.
So, what have you been doing since 2019? How have things changed for you?
That's me. I could, once I dropped out and walked away from that lifestyle, it was just this weight lifted off of me. I was no longer, I didn't have that over me anymore. So I was like free to be who I was always intended to be, just art, regular art. But I still had to learn, relearn, and reteach myself to be just normal, just be art. So it took me some time, it took me a lot of work. You know, in some ways it was easy. I even remember when I landed in THU, because we all, as being validated gang members, we got to go through the step-down program to make sure and debrief and go through all the process. And I did it. And I was able to just to get back on, try to put myself back together. And I seen a lot of the men that struggle, still dealing with anger, still having trouble letting go of that and feeling a lot of resentment towards that. But for me, it wasn't that way. For me, I was out of it. I was let go of all that weight, and I've just been doing work and continuing to work on myself. I got into a lot of groups, vocations. I got certified as a tutor, so that's one of the things that I'm.
So I want to shift gears a little bit here. Can you tell me how you met Joan Parkin?
I met her through a friend here. His name is Pepe. I know him as Pepe Morales. So he introduced me to her, mentioned what she does or what you guys do. So I believe I got something to say here. I could share something, maybe.
Sure.
Somebody will listen and maybe help them in some way. I know it helped me listening to other people and sharing their stories, how I related to them. That helped me in a lot. And I believe it's important for people to know. We all struggle through the same thing. We all relate. So it's a good thing. Another thing that I did here while I was over here was the REACH program, which is bringing troubled youth in here. So I did that for a minute. I did that for a year. And I was real proud of that. That was another big accomplishment of mine, trying to get back and help.
And you had mentioned earlier when we were talking that when you first got in, there wasn't much focus on rehabilitation. And, I mean, it just seems like it's counterproductive to throw somebody into a cage, lock them up, and not help them be able to get out of there, back into the real world and be productive. Can you talk about your experience like that?
Well, see, I started off, and they sent me to a 180 yards to Hatchipee. And, like I mentioned, never been to prison. I've done nothing but county time. I thought I knew it all. I thought I was ready to make it up here to the big leagues. And, it was real bad right there. Landing there at the Tehachapi 180, level 4 yard. And I came to find out we only had 90 days to stay there. Because it was in the middle of, it was getting flipped, how we say here. There was guys that were no good. And we had to get on. We had 90 days to do what we had to do. And we had to try to find somebody to assault to get out of there. If we can stay in that yard. And, And, I mean, that's how I started. You know, I mean, I didn't know who to believe. I didn't know who to go to. You know what I mean? I remember I didn't even want to be part of nothing. But he's like, had no choice. I'm trying to survive here. I got life. And my Celia at that time, he was trying to keep us safe, trying to not get us involved in. That was the first person I ever seen in the yard get stabbed. It happened right next to me. You know? And watching him fighting for his life while some guy's on top of him trying to cut his throat. And that traumatized me. You know, I still remember that. I didn't want to end up like that guy. And that was my whole mentality all my life. I didn't want to get stabbed. And thank God I never did. You know what I mean? I've been in riots. I've been in assaults. I've been involved in a lot of bad stuff over here. But thank God, nothing. I never got hurt that way. So, you know, and that's all there was for us out here. That's all there was. Wars, you know, go out to yards, fight over territory, fight over this, fight over that, fight over a table, you know, disrespect, respect. So, that's all that we had to do out here. It was nothing. It was nothing for us to do out here.
Do you believe that things are better now because there's programs?
In a lot of ways, yes. Again, now they got a lot of vocations here. They got education. They got a lot of groups. They got these tablets now. You know? So, I mean, the guys that come in, it sucks in here, right? But they got a better chance now to better themselves. You know? So that's why I tell a lot of these youngsters coming in. You know, I mean, hey, go to school, get your GED, go to vocation, take it serious, get out of here better. You know what I mean? Not worse. But there is, like I said, it sucks. It's prison. There's a lot of guys here messing around with drugs. They give them Suboxone now. They give them drugs for free now. So, you know what I mean? It sucks. And it's sad because they go out to the same. And they come back, you know. So, and it's just the cycle continues, you know. But you know, I mean, for the most part, like myself, there's a lot of men here that try to help. They try to go out here, facilitate groups. They come out here, be examples and mentor these guys. But you know, it's better. It's improving, you know. It has been improved the last couple of years. It has improved. So, you know, yeah.
What do you see as the biggest difference now?
Again, they shut down the security housing union. That's the thing, right? And I remember telling you, yes, it sucked for us being back there in security housing, right? And validated with, but some guys deserve to stay back there because they let them all out. And these guys are running amok out here and they're destroying these youngsters. They're grabbing these kids and just like they grabbed me when I was a kid and they mess them up, you know. But now, like I said, there's more programs. I don't know how it is, but in general population, it's a little difficult because you got the gangs out there, and they are restrictions. They can't go to certain things. They can't go to groups, and you know, so it's a little difficult for them. But being over here now in SNYCI, I choose to do the things that I want to do. I talk to everybody. I don't got nobody now telling me what to do, who do I can hang around with. I can't go there or there. Now I go everywhere. I talk to whoever I want to talk to and do the things that I want to do. So, unlike before, I was always restricted. I was always watched. I was always told or managed. I didn't manage my life. Somebody else did. And that's what's going on out there with these prison gangs. That's what's going on out there.
What was it like to be in the shoe?
Ah, man. You know, like I mentioned earlier, I was in this yard when it was a security housing. Ah, man, it was terrible. Terrible. Just the whole atmosphere. It was like, it was known as a snake pit. Because everybody was just on everybody's business, just watching everybody. Seeing who you talked to. Seeing what you said. And just waiting for you to lose a kite or say the wrong thing to get you stuck. You know, to mess you up, get you in a wreck. Get you in trouble. So it was just a real miserable place to be at, you know. And it was just everywhere, staff, inmates, everybody was just, it was all bad. I hated it here. It was just, I remember I got here like in the middle of summer and it was so hot. I landed in hell, you know, and plus, you know, they gave you a little reception here, the CO, they let you have it too. So it was just a miserable place. It's miserable, and, you know, it sucked. It sucked in here, you know, and like I said, misery loves company. So I've seen a lot of people here get hurt over the frivolous stuff, losing a little kite or saying the wrong thing or saying hi to the wrong guy. that was it. Your career was over. So, you know, it sucked here. I spent, five and something years back here. And, yeah, I was miserable. Miserable over here. I was glad I finally got out of here. I didn't want to come back and look. I'm back over here. Back, I walked around this yard looking at it like, damn, I never thought this place was ever going to shut down. There were nothing but cages out here for us. We're all in cages, like dogs in there and dog kennels, walking around in there. That was all in our yard. Now they're all gone. So I trip out on that, you know, but I'm glad it shut down. This place was known for bad things happening here. Like I said, a lot of people got hurt here. A lot of people got murdered here. And it's sad. Sad. You know?
So, when is your next parole date?
Actually, it's this year.
Oh, wow.
In July. Yeah.
So, what July have you 10th. Done to try to make it this time?
Well, like I mentioned, 2016, I went to court. They gave me a 7-year denial. They suggested to me to drop out, which I told them no, but I stuck and dove into self-help and tried to find out what was going on with me. So they asked me in 2016 if I was ready to go home, and I told them no. I told them no, I'm not ready to go home. I need to find out what was going on with me. Connect the dots to my past and find out what was going on with me. Why did I commit that crime? And why, what happened? And I've been doing that for the last year, 7 years now? Find out that person. Try to have them answers and just work on myself. You know? That's what I've been doing these years. Just working on myself, bettering myself, and trying to prepare myself. I know it's been a long time. I think of that. It's been a long time since I've been out there. Actually, in talking to my sisters and brothers, because my dad ended up passing away in 2021 from COVID. And so our parents are gone. But my sisters and then I've been so out of their lives. And just till recent, I'm discovering all these nephews and nieces that I had. And it's sad because I put them on the shelf, and I forgot about them, but they've been there. But it sucks that I don't even know a lot of these nephews and nieces, and I'm trying to prepare myself. I'm lucky and fortunate to still, you know, have them in my life, and for them to still talk to me, and my friends, and the support network that I have, because they want me to go, they want me out there, you know, I was talking to my baby brother the other day, and I thanked him. Because in 2019, he put that thought in my head to me to walk away from that lifestyle. You know, he's the one that put that thought in my head and dropped out. Because I didn't mention in 2019, they had asked me to commit another assault to stab somebody. And I almost did it again. It was real difficult for me to say no. I never said no to nothing. In 2019, they approached me again to stab somebody else. And I said no. I finally said no. I had. And I thanked him for telling me that, not to do it. Because I called him to say goodbye. I called him. I'm like, hey, bro, I'm gone.
Art, we're about to wrap up here, but I did want to ask you this one last question, which is, you know, what advice you would give somebody who is growing up in the position that you were in?
You know, when I did the REACH program, I met Damien. That was the first time they brought the kids right here when I was in 3A. They brought this kid named Damien, and he sat down, and I remember sitting down with him because we get a 45-minute talk, and he's telling me the same thing that he was going through as a kid. He's the same age as me, 13 years old. And he was telling me what he was dealing with his dad. I broke down. Because it was just, I seen myself in him, you know. And I was just encouraging them kids, just like I encouraged Damien to just communicate and talk to his parents. Somebody's a kid growing up as me, it's tough. You know what I mean? Gangs get you nothing but misery. You know what I mean? I wasted my life on that bullshit, you know, for nothing. And I just encourage them that regardless of how they feel, you know what I mean, it's with their band, somebody, whoever it is, you know, just talk to your parents, talk to your dad, talk to somebody. Always communicate and ask for help. There's nothing wrong with it. I understand that today there's nothing wrong with you asking for help. I know if I would have talked to my dad as a little kid, I wouldn't be. You know what I mean? I shut my doors. I just wouldn't talk or ask for help. But back to that day when they asked me to commit the last assault in 2019. And when that man next to me told me, Art, when I expressed myself that I had board coming up, that I'm going to try to get a chance to go home, he told me flat out, Art, forget about board. Forget about going home. You know, that hit me right there. I realized right then and then that, you know, it's just a waste. It was all for nothing. It was just being used. Anybody out there that listens to this, just like I tell these kids that I bump into in here, 19-year-old kids, and I was shocked when I see them. Why you dropped out? Why you over here? They said they were tired. Tired of it. They got it real quick. And I couldn't do it at that age. I couldn't drop out. That took courage. That took courage for them to come over here. I just advise everybody just to take that, walk away from that. Because, like I said, I've been over here 29 years, just a waste of my life. So, gangs, drugs, choices, they matter. You know what I mean? Choices will matter. They'll get you in here. So, don't make the wrong choice.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, Art. Yes. You have a great story to tell people. Tragic, but an important story for people to hear. This is Everyday Injustice. I'm your host, David Greenwald. Join us again next time for more tales from the injustice system.
Thank you to George Powell and Norman Mousequake Barrett for the use of our opening, Everyday Injustice. You can see more of George's music at www.justiceforgeorgepowell.com.